dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hole. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ, leave your pride on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 111 for August 30th, 2005. Black Ratchet is on vacation in Brazil, signing tons of receipts and stamping them and dealing with mountains of paperwork and ducts and squashing bugs. DJ Sub-Zero is our co-host this evening. Hello, DJ Sub-Zero.
What's happening, man?
Not too much. So, tonight's topic is telephony, past, present, and future. This will be one of the more hard technical shows that we've done. It's all been kind of fluff and is this thing on type of stuff up until now, but we're going to try and do something more technical this week. So, we're going to attempt to take live calls. I've got a number set up and I'm advertising in the forums and in the IRC channel for people to call in and ask questions about telephony. I'm not sure how successful this is going to be since we're actually recording the show ahead of time. But if anyone does show up, yeah, it could work. It could work. We did it for the Astros presentation, so we'll give it a shot.
Exactly.
So before we get started, is there anything you want to talk about, Sub-Zero?
No, not right now. I'm good for now.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Our first email is from Heprim. He says, "Hey there, Black Ratchet and Strom. I really enjoyed your Asterisk talk that you featured in the most recent episode of BinRev Radio. I've been relatively interested in Asterisk for a while now, but up until recently I haven't had the motivation to get on. I haven't had the motivation to get going with VoIP and Asterisk. Being in the UK, the VoIP market is definitely less well developed than that of the US, but after a bit of searching, I've managed to find some providers which outwardly support the use of Asterisk. I'm downloading Asterisk right now and playing around with it. Aside from that, I have a comment to make. Due to the very nature of a presentation, there is too much information included to be covered properly by show notes, so I'm requesting that the OpenOffice.org presentation file or a PDF of it be put up somewhere for public consumption. Sorry if it's already up and I've just overlooked it. Keep up the good work, Heprim." Well, for some reason... I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say, good email.
Yeah, it's a good email. Well, I'm glad to hear that you've enjoyed Asterisk and playing with it and whatnot. It's certainly a big thrill to set up. For some reason, I honestly thought that Ratchet was going to put the presentation up on his website, but I guess he didn't. So I'll have the material up either on my website or on BinRev Radio shortly, if I can get access to the website. So, is that your phone going off?
Yeah. I think it's you calling me on the other line.
No,
it's somebody calling me, though. I are setting it up. Private number. I wonder who that is. Sweet. No, I was going to say about this email, though. I know how you feel, because, even in the United States, there's areas that, VoIP isn't, there's not a big market for it right now. Like, for instance, I live in Iowa. And in Iowa, if I mentioned VoIP to anybody, they would just freak out and not know what it is. They're like, VoIP? It kind of sounds like a sound from, a movie or something. I don't know.
VoIP is a new drug craze.
Yeah, it's a new drug. No, but, that's what happens. I mean, right now, I mean, VoIP is a big thing because, that's where technology is going. But on the other hand, it's not everywhere yet. And, We're like behind the times here in Iowa, so don't feel bad like for being in the UK and things are not like as developed as the United States, because like even in the United States, like there's like a lot of areas that don't even know what VoIP is yet. So
yeah, I'm looking up and I'm just seeing if there's anything. I'm trying to find a PSTN termination provider for the UK. I know they're out there. I'm not sure who it is. Although I know that Broadvoice, although Broadvoice can't give you a UK number, they will give you free calls to the UK as part of your plan. So there's one solution.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's go on to the next email. This one's from Imperial Dragon 144. Hi, angle bracket, who's on the show? Close angle bracket. I guess I'm supposed to actually put my name in there, so. Hi.
No, I think that's for me.
Okay, so. Hi, yeah. Sub-Zero and Strom. I don't know if you've heard, and if yes, I'm sorry to bring old news, but Google released an IM client, www.google.com/talk. It doesn't seem to have anything more than other IM clients except being made by Google, but that seems to be enough for some people. Will Google one day make an OS, a doomsday machine, rule the world? Seriously, I checked the terms of service and saw some weird stuff. Yes, it's funny. I mean, people think that Google's taking over the world. Anyway, back to the email.
Slowly.
Yeah. Seriously, I checked the TOS and saw some weird stuff. Use the servers for any fraudulent or inappropriate purpose. Inappropriate? What is that? Swearing? Can they take everything they forgot to prohibit and say it's inappropriate? Quote, Google may access or disclose your personal information, including the content of your communications, if Google is required to do so in order to comply with any valid legal process or governmental request, unquote. I haven't checked with the other IMs to see if it's common we don't want trouble with the feds clause, probably is. But does that mean the information is there? They record all you say? Do I need to say more? Well, I will. Quote, we do not log any of the content of your chats or calls, unquote. But they just said that, WTF? Okay, now what they have to explain is this. Google Talk will collect certain log information created in the course of a conversation. So they start saying that they are recording the conversation to recording nothing at all to recording logs. I know I'd love to check one of those logs. I love your show. Continue the good work. Imperial Dragon 144.
Okay, so I actually have personally tried Google Talk.
Mm-hmm.
I downloaded the client. Me and Adam were messing around with it the other day just to see what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about other clients. I obviously know, like, Google Talk is... I mean, just like the way Google works, like, even, like, with Gmail, you know how they always have... I mean, they're always... seems to be those ads that just know exactly what you're talking about. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Google implemented some sort of, like, I guess, not logs. I don't think they would be recording everything that you say, but I'm sure they're, like, looking for keywords and, like, stuff that might be objectionable. And I don't know if it's for safety reasons. I know AOL Instant Messenger a while back, I think, had a problem with this before, because I think there was law case a while back. I'm not sure exactly what it was, and I'll have to bring that up if I can later, if I can find it. But somebody, there was, I think it was like an abduction case with a child, and they were looking through logs of like the message, like just that the child and the person had, but it was kind of weird because like they didn't record the conversation. Somehow there was logs involved. So
well,
I'm not sure if
did the individual clients have logging turned on?
See, like, I don't know exactly. I forget the, like, total exactly details of the situation. But, like, I know that, like, just for them to cover themselves legally, I wouldn't be surprised if they do check. I mean, pretty much anything on the Internet can be safely assumed that it's being monitored in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just, I'm not a paranoid person at all, and, like, I really honestly don't care very much, but... I'm going to keep believing under and, like, have the impression that people are watching just because that's just how it is.
Right. My interpretation of those clauses really is that apart from recording data to what you'd expect to find in web server logs, Google doesn't record the content of your messages. I mean, pretty much if you look at it, right, Google may... Let me just put this... in order here.
Well, I mean, it'd be so... Can you imagine the logs that they'd have?
Yeah, I mean, if they logged every conversation, they would just... you know, their storage requirements for the service would be mind-boggling.
I think what it does give them, like, in the terms of service, I think what it ends up giving them permission to do is if there was questionable activity within a certain person's username, that they'd have the ability to go in and log that
person. Right, right. Yeah, it gives them the ability. Should there be a subpoena or questionable activity, then they can monitor and see what's going on.
Yeah.
But
then he mentions, the service for any fraudulent or inappropriate purposes. Sorry,
mm-hmm.
I can't talk. Inappropriate. He's like, what is inappropriate? Swearing? Like, I think basically they just mean state laws. Like, when they talk about inappropriate purposes, because the internet has no actual law. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
no law to govern the internet. So what they do is every state governs. I mean, like, if you're in, you know, Minnesota and you're doing something questionable in Minnesota, like, you can't gamble if you're not of age in Minnesota, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So getting online and gambling where you can, it's still illegal because you're within the state that has those laws, sort of thing. Like,
right.
The state that you're in encompasses the laws that, I guess, bound you to certain laws online.
Yeah, and I think the general rule with most of these things is, you know, they put things in the user agreement for the purposes, for those situations where they really do need to exercise those parts of the agreements. But, I mean, those are worst-case scenarios, like, say, someone's spamming or someone suspected of, you know, abducting someone or someone suspected of planning a murder using the instant messaging service, right? So then,
exactly.
You know, they go back and they can, you know, they can go through and check. Or if someone is harassing other users, you know, they can use those clauses to suspend the user from the service. But for the most part, you know, the idea is to provide service, not to be this oligarchical, you know, repressive entity.
Exactly.
So, you know, it just use common sense, guys. If they, you know, strenuously monitored and you know, restricted, if they acted basically like the government in Orwell's 1984, right, then
mm-hmm.
no one would use the service. So,
exactly.
You know, they just have those clauses in there for their own protection for cases where that sort of stuff has to happen. But,
and like I said earlier, I mean, like, if you're the paranoid toward a person that you're just not going to use Google Talk because it has this, like, questionable terms of service, I mean, once you start reading, like, most terms of service for anything, like, you just sit there and it's mind-boggling just because, in the end, all these companies and businesses want to do is just cover themselves for anything that might go wrong or could possibly go wrong. So for that to happen, like, most of these terms of services are, like, 5 pages long and deal with, like, just a bunch of stuff that isn't really applicable at the moment, but like if something happens, you know, they have it there, you know, they can say that, hey, we were ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
So like most of these places don't, I mean, go to Yahoo email, go to Gmail, go to like anything, go to any website and read terms of service for any website and you'll see like the exact same thing said in every website.
Mm-hmm.
And like they'll monitor things if they have to, I mean, but that's just how it is.
Yeah, and even check.
But if you're going to sit there and be paranoid about it, then I mean, the internet's probably not a good place for you to hang out. Cause
yeah. Well, if you're paranoid, society is probably not a good place for you to hang out.
Exactly.
Better to go out to the middle of the, you know, San Bernardino County into the San Joaquin, what is it? The desert in Southern California, the name of which temporarily escapes me, and you know, just live in a bungalow in the ground somewhere.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Let's,
I agree.
Yeah. So, personal hacking stories. Did you do anything interesting this recently?
Like, any personal hacking stories? I'm trying to think. I'll think about it for a second, because I know I did something, but I'm forgetting what happened.
All right, well, I'll go into mine then.
All right, go.
On Friday, I saw a 35mm print of Brazil, which was a great lot of fun. I had never seen it on the big screen before, only seen it on DVD. And that is a great film. If you haven't seen Brazil yet, go get the DVD and watch it. And if you ever get the opportunity to watch it on a film screen, I highly recommend you do, because it's just amazing masterpiece.
Awesome.
I think they showed
it
on DEFCON TV as well.
Yeah, I think I saw it on DEFCON TV as well, too.
Other than that, school starts this week for me. I'm going back to college after a hiatus, so that's exciting for me.
Nice. Yeah, I went back to school this past week, and it was pretty interesting, because I'm now getting to the point that, like, have you ever seen the movie Van Wilder?
I saw bits and pieces of it, but it kind of seemed a little juvenile for my taste.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for some, like, my goal in the end of my college career is to be kind of like that guy, just because we're, like, everybody knows him. And it's kind of getting there, because it was kind of hard to walk to class without seeing, like, I'm on a campus with 27,000 people, but, like, I couldn't walk to class without, like, stopping and knowing somebody every 5 minutes. It was kind of funny. No, I know what I did. I hooked up, I'm right now on my desktop up to a half a terabyte of space. I have about 550 gigabytes of space. I went and bought a new 200 gigabyte hard drive the other day.
Oh, cool.
We're doing some video stuff, so we, like, need the room.
Yeah, I bought some hard drive enclosures the other day, and I've been playing around with it. A friend of mine asked me to restore some data from his crashed computer, so I bought this external hard drive enclosure to put the hard drive in. And, man, these things are cool. They're awesome.
Yeah, I know. I have two of them. I have three external hard drives and two internal hard drives.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, quite the amount of space, but I mean, with what I do, you know, I kind of need it. So.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But, yeah, that's pretty much it, other than just trying to get things organized for some stuff that's going to happen next week. I'll just talk about that at the end of the show, though.
Oh, cool. Anyway, last week I talked about my idea to do music reviews for the show, and someone actually sent in music, so here is the very first edition of Strum's Music Review. I might come up with a catchier name for it later, and if you want to suggest a catchy name for this segment, feel free to email radio@binriff.com. Anyway.
You need a little theme song.
Yeah, I need my own music review theme song. I don't know what it is yet, but if anyone out there listening wants to compose a Strum's Music Review theme song, by all means, feel free.
Awesome.
Anyway. Rays, I think that's how you pronounce it, of a band called Post Pathos. I think he said it's from a metal band from New York City. He sent in three songs his band recorded, and they're called Scar, Waste Matter, and Distance. So I listened to these, and they actually, I quite like them for the most part. The vocals remind me a lot of, I think it's Terry Kath, who does the first verse of I'm a Man on the 1969 Chicago Transit Authority album. The only real difference being that Terry Kath wasn't flat singing the songs. He's a good vocalist on these recordings, but he just doesn't hit the note correctly. He always seems to err on the side of flatness. And the songs themselves do have a good emotional color to them, but they kind of sound muddy in the mixing. But I don't think that's any fault of the band themselves. They probably just mix this on their computer or something.
Yeah.
So, but I definitely like to listen to these songs again when the mix is cleaned up and either the vocalist can sing or they get a vocalist who can. And apologies to the vocalist from Post Pathos. But anyway, I recommend that you go and listen to them. Their address is www.geocities.com/post_pathos.
P-A-T-H-O-S.
Yes. And we're going to use...
I'm on the website right now.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we're going to use, I think, Waste Matter as the closing theme tonight, so
awesome.
We will get to hear that.
Yeah, I'm on the website right now. They have some... I like the picture that they have as their graphic. It looks pretty original.
Yeah, yeah, I love the visual style of the site.
Yeah.
All right, and finally, let's get into our show topic for
Woo-hoo!
The week, which is telephony, a little bit of past, a lot of present, and a lot of future. So,
sweet.
Yeah, this is the Hardcore Telephony Show, and so pretty much what I'm going to do is I'm just going to do a basic introduction to, you know, telephony and how it works and the world of, you know, the analog network and the digital network and the VoIP network.
Awesome.
And Sub-Zero here, I guess you're... I forget how much you know about telephones.
Dude, I'm a noob. No, I know a bit, not enough... Not as much as you, but I can get around. Just I'm pretty noobish though.
All right, cool. Well, I guess then you'll function as the voice of the audience here who doesn't know telephones as well as I do, and
awesome.
Ask for clarification, questions, anything.
Sounds good.
So, let me see. I asked the BinRef forums. Let's actually see if anybody is sitting on the call-in queue at the moment. Someone appears to be calling in, so let me grab that call. Just a second. All right, on the line we have Ponyboy from... Do you want me to tell them where you're from?
Hell yes, go ahead.
All right, Ponyboy from Atlanta, Georgia. Let me bring him in here. Hello, Ponyboy.
Hello.
Welcome.
All right.
Congratulations on being the very first call-in question on Binary Revolution Radio.
Well, thank you very much.
How's it
my
going,
question
Ponyboy?
Was, it's going great, but unfortunately, I did a radio show about a week ago, and the topic was the future of telephony.
Yes.
And then some people totally ripped me off.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, you did?
What show was it?
Oh, Belcore Radio,
Yes, Belcore Radio.
I'm sorry. I honestly did not intend to rip you off. I came up with the topic totally independently of you.
No, I completely understand. I had to find some way to get a shameless plug in.
Nice. And I promise I had nothing to do with it.
All right, so what's your question, Ponyboy?
All right, my question was regarding, I don't know if you guys have read on Slashdot and whatnot about the new cellular technologies that Texas Instrument has come out with that can make cell phones a lot cheaper and easier to afford. And I was wondering how you guys think that's going to affect the use of landlines and, like, the payphone industry.
Why don't you give a deeper description, more in-depth description of the new technology that you're talking about?
Well, basically, instead of having a GSM cell phone that could have, you know, up to three or more chips inside to make it run, they've basically, I don't know the exact details of how they did it, but they've basically got it so that they can have a cell phone with one chip inside that will make it basically make a cell phone so cheap that just about anyone can afford to buy one.
Did they mention a price point for the completed phone?
I don't think that they're marketing it just yet, but I think that they just officially figured out that it works. So,
Very cool. Well, I mean, cell phones are getting cheaper anyway. You can go for, you know, $80 or so and buy a prepaid cell phone totally anonymously with cash. And that includes the phone, an hour of service, and, you know, 60 minutes of talk time from T-Mobile. Or you can go, and oftentimes you'll get a free cell phone when you sign up for, you know, a year of mobile phone service at however many dollars a month. And I don't think that, you know, See, the way the free phone thing works is that you sign up for a year or 2 years of service basically to subsidize the cost of your telephone set because, you know, T-Mobile or Verizon or Singular or whoever you go with has to purchase the phone, and then they give you the phone for free under the assumption that you're going to generate enough revenue for them in order to, you know, actually repay them for the cost of your phone plus generate them a profit. So if the cell phones themselves become cheaper to manufacture, the long-term impact is probably not going to be on cell phone prices themselves, but on the cost of providing month-to-month service from the mobile phone company. And even if they do manage to make phones that are cheap and that, you know, you can buy out of a vending machine for, you know, say $15 or something and buy talk time for 10 cents a minute, I think the cell phone is cheap enough now to where, you know, it's basically a commodity item. People do spend lots of money on designer phones and fancier phones and whatnot, but I think at this point the phones are cheap enough that, you know, market saturation is, you know, even at this price point would be something that is likely to happen. What do you think?
I agree with you totally. Because right now, I mean, cell phones are so cheap. What you end up paying for is not the cell phone, it's the service. And, like, I mean, you have the track phones that have been out, and, like, even those are, like, considerably way less money than they were before. Like, I remember when they first started coming out. And, like, right now, like, there's going to be a point in time where even now, everybody has a cell phone. So the fact that, some cell phones are going to become cheaper isn't going to help out, I think, not that much. And, I don't know how big an effect it's going to have, on payphone. He mentioned payphone usage. I mean, they're always going to be there. And even if it's, it's just easy. I mean, why have to go deal, buy a cell phone or, get a cheaper cell phone just to make a couple calls, when you could just go to a payphone? I don't know. To me, personally, I see that it's not going to have at least a big effect. In the long run, it might, but in the short run, it's just going to be an easier thing. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, at least the way I see things going, right? The payphone is dying a slow death, but there is a market for it. You go to a different state or a different country or something, and the cost of using your mobile phone there is just prohibitively expensive, so you use a payphone or a wireline phone. And, there is definitely a market for wireline services, and we'll get into that actually because there was a question about that from the message board. But, pretty much the way I view it, at least, and the way most people use their telephony services is that the home phone is used while at home, and the mobile phone is a phone that you use while you're outside of the house, and you're not mm-hmm. near your home and your office phone. And, I mean, there are predictions of people who think that the world's going to go totally wireless and we're not going to have any wireline phones anymore. But wireless calls sound like crap, and they're not as reliable as wired connections. And they're more expensive in general. So,
definitely. I was just going to mention that. No matter how good technology gets, just having a landline, you're going to have the quality that you need. Especially, for instance, if you're doing big business meetings, you're not going to want to have static in a meeting.
Yeah.
And, it's more secure, and I don't know. I think maybe, on personal use, cell phones might get a bit more popular. I don't see it getting more popular than it is now, because, even my 10-year-old cousin has a cell phone, So it's one of those things that, it's going to affect some things, but in the end, I think it's not going to have quite the most visible effect that people are expecting it to have.
Right. And, the other thing you have to look at when you look at market saturation numbers, I forget exactly what the market saturation for mobile phones is these days. But, even I think I heard CD players only have 80% market saturation, and television sets only have, 75 or 80% market saturation. So you'll never reach a point where everybody has a TV set or a telephone or a compact disc player. That'll never happen. There will always be some segment of the society that doesn't either can't afford it or doesn't want it.
Yep.
And so we're kind of approaching that point of market saturation with mobile phones, and I think the technology will only get cheaper, and that'll be a benefit for the mobile phone industry.
But even if technology gets cheaper, think about it too. Any time that there's, a new phone comes out, for instance, the Sidekicks,
mm-hmm.
When they first came out, they were, $350, $400,
mm-hmm.
And it was just the thing to do. It wasn't more, people weren't after price. They were just after, style, I guess, or
right.
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because there's always kind of this, as technology, especially in areas where technology improves greatly as each year goes past, the fact that the old technology becomes obsolete so quickly almost guarantees the manufacturers, profit just so long as they keep cranking out new models.
Yep.
And it's kind of funny to look at the way the industry went, right? Initially you had these big brick phones that, that was as small as they could make it, and, they just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And then it kind of reached a point where the technology was small enough that it was actually getting impractically small.
I
think the smallest phone I ever used was like a Nokia 80... What the heck was that really tiny GSM phone that was popular 4 or 5 years ago? It was like the Nokia 8920 or something? I forget exactly what it was. But it was a little tiny Nokia GSM phone, right?
Yeah.
And it was pretty much the same feature set as all the other cell phones. And then now they've started to become bigger, but now instead of, getting smaller and just differentiating on size, size is no longer an issue for the manufacturers, so they're differentiating on features.
Yep.
Color screens, ability to play music, you know, and the ability to do text messaging, web browsing, and so on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the technology will, again, just cater to the demands of the market.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, like, those cheaper phones are probably going to help out a few people. And, like, but it's not going to, like, who the cell phone companies are marketing to in the end is not those people. And, like, even if it's going to give them a couple more sales, that's not who they're going to be, like, wanting to go after. They're going to come out with new phones, obviously, that are going to be cheaper to make, but they're going to be higher quality, and they're still going to be more expensive than before. I mean, if they can come out with a phone that has one chipset, you know, and does everything that it needs to, instead of them charging less, I bet they're going to start charging more for them, just for the fact that it's, like, newer technology.
Well, I mean, there's like an interesting dynamic in, you know, pricing things versus, you know, versus the manufacturing cost. Yeah, if you manage to figure out a way to manufacture something for, say, 50% of what it cost to manufacture before, right, and there's already a market full of, you know, of competitors, what's more likely to happen is not that you're going to bring out that phone at the lowest possible price, but you're going to market it at a price which is competitive but is still high enough to generate you the maximum amount of profit you can make.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and I was going to say, too, like, these phones that are going to be coming out aren't going to be, like, low-end quality phones, because what's the point of appealing? I mean, they might be cheaper phones to make, but in the end, they're not going to make the sales that they could, you know?
Right.
So they're going to be wanting to make a better phone with this new technology, and instead of making a cheaper phone, it's going to end up being a newer phone with better technology, but it could end up being more expensive.
Right, right. So anyway, I think we've beaten the horse on this one.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you for your question, Ponyboy, and congratulations on being the very first call-in question in WindRev Radio history.
Well, thanks for taking the time to answer my question there.
You're very welcome.
All right.
This is Ponyboy from Atlanta, Georgia, and co-host of Bellcore Radio. You want to pimp your show? What's the site?
Give it a listen. It's bellcoreradio.net. New episodes every other Thursday.
Cool. And that's C-O-R-E, not C-O-R-P-S.
Yeah, C-O-R-E. All right.
All right.
Awesome.
Catch you later, dude.
Yes.
Cool.
Awesome.
That was surprisingly successful.
Yeah.
And now there is nobody in the queue. So let's go to...
email?
Some questions, some specific questions.
Awesome.
Okay, what should we do first? Why don't we do... Okay, there are two kind of related questions here. One is from...
Okay.
These are both from the Binary Revolution Forum, so this is from binrev.com/forum. One of them says, this is from a guy named Andrew. He says, you could talk about VoIP and maybe how it works, how a call is routed across the country through the PSTN and or VoIP. I would love to find out what main centers my call from here in Newfoundland goes through to get to California, and why VoIP is the future of telephony, Andrew. And then Dr. Zygman says, how does SS7 work? So these are kind of related things. So let me see if I can... Oh, you know what I did? I have a copy of Lurg, but what I did was I've been rewriting, because the format changed, and I loaded it into my SQL database, and I didn't realize the format has changed. So my current homing arrangement database is not accessible at the moment. But what I'll do is I will do an example that I know, and I will post, I'll either post directly to you, Andrew, or I'll just note on the show at a later point how calls are routed from Newfoundland to California. So basically the phone network is made up of switches. And a switch, not a little light switch, it's similar to, you know, the Ethernet switch that you have in your network, except it's a hell of a lot bigger, and it's a time division circuit switch rather than a packet switch. The three main switch types, and there's more than three, but the major switch types in North America are the 5ESS from Lucent, the DMS-100 and the DMS-10 from Nortel, the GTD5 EAX, manufactured by the now-defunct Automatic Electric Company. There's also the Siemens, what is it, EWSD switch. And there are a number of other switches. There's the Stromberg Carlson DCO. These are all end-office switches. And the tandem version, basically, let me not jump ahead of myself. You have these end-office switches, which are basically what give you dial tone. They're what your phone line is connected to. So you pick up your phone, and you get a dial tone. And say you're calling the person, you know, a mile away from you. So you dial their number, 555-2368. The switch does a translation on that number. It says, okay, 555-2368. My prefix is 555, and that line is in my line tray. So it switches, it basically finds a point in its time division switching matrix, and it connects the audio from your phone line to the other phone line. It doesn't connect the audio all the way to the second phone line until the other end picks up, but we'll get into that in a second. What it does then is it checks to see whether the called line is free. If so, it starts ringing the line, and if not, it gives you a busy signal. If the line is free and the line rings, voltage in North America, 90 volts AC at 20 hertz, is sent to the called party, and you hear the audible ring tone. And then once they pick up, and that's called they supervise, the call supervises, and your audio is connected to their audio, and you're allowed to have a conversation. And then when one of you hangs up, the call is torn down. That's the most basic type of telephone call, which is an intra-office call. There's also a type of call called an inter-office call, and this happens when you call someone who is not served out of your telephone switch. Obviously, one switch can't serve a whole city. The switches tend to serve an area roughly it's about 18,000 feet, so roughly 3 to 5 miles in diameter from the actual central office building is where the area that the switches serve. Sometimes it's smaller, sometimes it's bigger, depends on the telephone company and the area, but generally it's about 3 to 5 mile radius. So say you call someone 20 miles away, and so you pick up your phone, you dial their number, and say it's a seven-digit number. Say you dial 454-3474, and the switch says, you know, oh, okay, 454, that's the Gladstone office. And these days, the offices really don't have names anymore, but they used to. So the switch says, okay, that's that office on the other side of town. So what it does is there are telephone lines that run between these switches. These are called trunks. And these days, the trunks are all run on fiber optic cable. In the old days, they were analog, either individual cable pairs, or they went over some sort of radio frequency carrier system. But these days, you know, these are all digital trunks. So the switch that you're calling from selects a trunk to the other switch and signals the other switch that a call is coming through on that trunk. Your switch to that trunk, and then control the call is handed off to the other switch. The switch on the called end then does the same thing that happened when you called the person on your same switch. It looks at the line, sees whether it's free, rings or gets it busy, and what it does is it connects the audio path to your trunk. Doesn't connect the audio path of the called line to your trunk yet, but it does connect the audio path inside of it to your trunk so it can send you either the ring or the busy signal. What's supposed to happen in many cases is that I'll get into that when I get into what SS7 is shortly. But it's so easy to get ahead of yourself when describing this thing because everything's just intertwined and interworked and relies on everything else. But I'm trying to explain this as simply as I can. So if you make a call, say, all the way to the other side of your metropolitan area, like say you're in Santa Monica and you make a call all the way out to Ontario or something, that's what happens then is there's something called a tandem. And a tandem is basically a switch that connects telephone offices together. So in this case, let's see, Santa Monica and Ontario are both former GTE areas, now Verizon. So I'm trying to remember exactly how the call routes. The most basic way that it'll route is the office in Santa Monica and the office in Ontario will not be connected directly to each other because they are not in contiguous service areas. In this case, they're both Verizon areas, but running right through the middle of them is a huge chunk of SBC territory. So what will happen is the office in Santa Monica, the end office you're calling from, will pick up a trunk to the Tandem office, which is actually located in downtown Santa Monica. It will signal the Tandem office that it wants to make a call to the Ontario switch. The Tandem office will then select a trunk. I believe the Santa Monica Tandem office will either have a direct trunk to the Ontario switch, or most likely it'll have a direct trunk to the Ontario Tandem. I'm not sure where exactly the Tandem is. I think it's either on Ontario or like in Rancho Cucamonga somewhere. But at this point, the detail is kind of inconsequential. And I'm sure one of the guys who lives out there will call and correct me immediately. But
they'll be like, No,
it was Pacoima. No, Pacoima is nowhere near here. But
no, continue.
So the Tandem office in Santa Monica will pick up a trunk to the Tandem office in Ontario, and it'll say, okay, call to, the end office serving the northern half of Ontario. The Tandem office in Ontario will pick up a trunk to the end office, signal the call to that end office, and the end office will do the originating line thing. And once, not the originating, do the thing where it checks for the status of the called line. And again, at this point, the audio path is connected from the Ontario switch all the way back to the Santa Monica switch through all those tandems from one end office to another. And the Ontario switch, again, sends the ringing signal back to the Santa Monica end office or the busy signal back to the Santa Monica end office. And when the called party in Ontario answers the phone and says hello, the audio path is complete, and hello gets transmitted all the way back to Santa Monica. So that's basic call routing. When you go over inter-exchange carriers, say you make a long-distance call from Los Angeles to San Francisco, what will happen is, for the most part, the end office switches will have direct connections to the long-distance company switches. So there are access tandems in case those trunk groups are busy, but for the most part, they'll have direct connections if they're reasonably close.
That's so convenient.
Say you make a call over AT&T. So you call from Los Angeles somewhere to, say, Concord, California, in the East Bay. So you dial 925-685-1230.
Mm-hmm.
That's a number served off the Concord switch in Concord, California.
Right now.
It's a college in Concord. And there's nobody there at this point. Last I checked, they had a Mitel PBX, but that might have changed since I was there. Anyway, back to the main point. If your call is set up to route over AT&T, say you have AT&T as your long-distance carrier, your end office switch in Los Angeles will pick up a direct trunk to the AT&T switch in the downtown Los Angeles building. There's actually two of them. I'm not sure which one is used for which function or if they share functions, but it'll pick up a trunk to one of them and hand the call off to the AT&T tandem. The AT&T tandem will then pick up a trunk to the switch in Oakland, California, will then pick up a trunk to the Concord office, and the signaling will be sent to the Concord office, and Concord office will ring the destination line. In this case, that line is served off of either a T1 or a primary rate ISDN, so and T1 and primary rate ISDN are basically technologies that the phone company uses to deliver digital phone lines directly to a customer's premises. For when they have, need more than a few phone lines, they'll deliver one cable, which carries 24 phone lines in the case of a T1, or 23, and a signaling channel in the case of primary rate ISDN.
Okay.
So, but for the most part, the status of the line check is for the most part the same. And it'll connect you to the terminating line, and audio is passed all the way back to your switch, and that's how the call's set up. So there's a signaling.
Pretty basic.
Yeah, pretty basic. Any questions at this point?
No, I think I'm doing pretty good.
All right, cool. So there's a way that the switches talk to each other called signaling system number 7, or SS7. And in the old days, before SS7, the switches used in-band signaling, which sounded a lot like this.
sorry. The number you have reached is not in service or temporarily disconnected. The number you have reached is not in service at this time. This is a recording.
And what the switch would do is it would actually, you know, pick up the trunk to the next switch in the line and literally supervise and send the number in the form of those tones.
Okay.
And, you know, what this was a kind of a weakness in the phone system because it allowed phone freaks to actually control the network by using a blue box. All you had to do was imitate the tones that it sent down the line, and the switch on the receiving end would not be able to tell the difference between you and the switch it normally talks to on that trunk.
Gotcha.
So, however, you know, now, these days, the signaling information is not carried on the phone line. Touch tone, for example, is a way of in-band signaling. You know, you press buttons, and the tones actually get sent all the way down the line to the telephone company switch, which then interprets those tones. But in the case of call setup, I mean, note how when you pick up the phone and you dial even a long-distance call, it starts ringing almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's because the phone switches now talk on a packet switch network, kind of similar to the way Internet Protocol works, although it's in reality completely different. But for, you know, basic purposes of understanding, just imagine a separate packet switch network, which is not the Internet and which is not the voice telephone network. This is the SS7 network. And what it does is it basically sends instructions down the line and says to, you know, to the next office, you know, hey, set up a call on this trunk to this number.
So it's just more instant.
Yeah, well, it's faster. You don't have to pick up the trunk, wink, and send tones. You just send a packet, and the other switch, you know, deals with it almost immediately. The call setup times are much faster. So basically, the you know, for longer calls, for shorter interoffice calls, and note that SS7 is only used for interoffice calls. It's not used when you're making a call within the same switch.
Mm-hmm.
But SS7 basically for, you know, short interoffice calls that only need to go from one office to the next, you know, the switches will just talk directly via SS7. And for longer calls, where the call has to be set up over multiple networks and whatnot, the SS7 call setup information will get passed from one switch to the next, and they'll all send an acknowledgement messages back as the call is set up.
I had a question for you, actually.
Yeah, ask away.
Okay. This might seem kind of noobish, but you were talking about how, like, okay, like when you're making the call, it looks at the receiving end and see if there's like somebody on the line or not.
Mm-hmm.
So with VoIP, is there like, can you like have more than one person, like, you know, call you at the same time?
Oh yeah. That I'll get into that in a second, but that's okay. You know, basically dependent on the end equipment.
Gotcha.
But
okay, yeah, because I was just somebody asked me a question the other day about that, and I was kind of clueless as to they were wondering about multiple calls at the same time over a line, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Oh, wasn't I asking you about this too for the radio show?
Oh yeah, I think you were asking me about that.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll explain
right,
that.
Well, so yeah, okay, you can get to that in a second because I had a question about that for me because I want to set up an asterisk box. And
okay. Yeah, no, totally. Okay. Oh, now I remember where I was. So, yeah. So, the various switches in the connection will all send acknowledgement messages back as the call is set up. And in fact, what's really supposed to happen is, you know, if the called line is busy, you know, regardless of how many links are in the chain, the called office is supposed to just send a busy message back to your telephone line, to your switch. And your local switch is supposed to give you the busy signal, or the ring signal.
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
And in fact, like on an ISDN phone, that'll happen. You'll just hear the ringing from your actual telephone set itself, because the phone has a similar out-of-band signaling connection to your switch. So you'll hear, if you're calling an ISDN line, you'll just hear the phone ringing in your ear, your actual phone, not the ringing sound from the distant end office. And similar thing with VoIP, because VoIP, again, uses the kind of similar out-of-band signaling concepts. So, mean, there obviously there are situations where this won't work. Like, for example, there's this new thing where I think personally think it's kind of dumb, but you can subscribe to the service from your mobile phone carrier where you replace the sound of ringing with music or whatever. And I think it's confusing. I actually ran into this the other day, and I thought it had gone straight to voicemail, so I hung up.
Yeah.
And they called me back, and they said, "Hey, you called. Why did you hang up immediately after calling?" I said, "Wait a second, that was ringing?" So I think it's more...
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think my service has that.
Yeah, the only thing I would use to replace it with was just replace a standard, you know, ESS-type ring with something, say, from maybe a number 5 crossbar or a step or another old electromechanical switch, but I'm just weird like that, and I don't think you can actually specify your own... audio for that. But so anyway, you know, mobile phones, digital mobile phones and VoIP also use similar out-of-band signaling protocols. And they are different. The main part of the SS7 VoIP network is the ISDN user part, which is ISUP. Mobile phones, I think, use mobile telephone application part or mobile application part. I forget which part of the specification that is. And VoIP phones use either SIP or H.323 or EECS, which are various VoIP signaling protocols. But the basic ideas are the same. You know, the call setup information is transmitted as data rather than as tones.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had that question about multiple calls coming in at the same time on VoIP. Again, yeah, that's, you know, kind of the same idea as call waiting. You know, in the case of a peer-to-peer arrangement, you know, your telephone set will actually, you know, not even peer-to-peer. In the case of any VoIP call, the piece of software which is responsible for, you know, handling the call, you know, when it's sitting idle, obviously it'll take the call and ring, and then, you know, if the software is designed to have the ability to take more than one call at any given time, if a second call comes in, then it'll function very similar, you know, to the user, to the way call waiting works. You know, it'll say, you know, "Oh, okay, yeah, this call is being set up, ringing the phone, please hold." And if it's not, it'll just send back a busy message.
How about the software? Is it easily customizable? Can you, like, go in and customize it for your needs?
Well, I think it depends on the package. I mean, as far as going in and customizing from user-level control panel options, that depends on the package. And as far as actually rewriting it, I mean, but honestly, if you're using a SIP client that doesn't do more than one call at a time and you're considering rewriting it, I would probably suggest that you go find a different SIP client because I think most of them do handle more than one call at any given time.
Awesome. Okay.
What's actually kind of interesting is a lot of times, like, one thing I find quite useful, mobile phones served out of a 5ESS will often do this thing where when you call them, you'll know if the call party is on another call already while it's ringing. Instead of hearing, you'll hear something like this.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, because I'm on a 5ESS.
And your mobile phone?
Yes, and so, like, I can tell, like, when there's somebody on the other line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you hear that slightly different ring, and I think that's an awesome feature. I wish that were the case on all telephones, but I guess I can't have my way all the time. So that's basically how SS7 works. It sends, you know, call setup messages and says, you know, "Hey, here's the number that's being called. Here's the number that's calling this number. Here's the number that the call is being billed to. Here's the forwarding number if this call is being forwarded," and so on. And the actual SS7 specification is, you know, hundreds of pages long, and there are messages for every conceivable possibility, and there's different types of messages. Again, there's numbers, there's the class of service of the originating lines, so the switch can tell whether you're calling from a payphone or a mobile phone or a house phone or a hotel phone or anything. And those are called ANI II digits. And so, I mean, there's just tons and tons of information that can be sent. Not all of it is sent all the time, but mm-hmm. there certainly is written into the specification, you know, messages for almost every eventual possibility. So, to the next query from the forum. Merck says, it would be cool if you did something on the internals of Asterisk and PBXs in general.
Well, this is a good question, because I had some questions the other day about this, too. Because we were sending, like, I was talking to you about wanting to set up an Asterisk box for Geek Love Radio, and how we would go about that, and, like, what, I mean, like, how easy is it, you know, and, like...
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not, and he continues the question, and internals of different exchange systems such as the Lucent 5 ESS.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, he's more deeper in depth than that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really sure what he means by internals. Does he mean the software that runs them? Does he mean the actual switching matrix itself? Or switching matrix itself? So, I'll just try and answer both possibilities. As far as the switching matrix itself goes, the way time division switching works is that, okay, all audio on the phone network these days is digital PCM. It's a Mu-Law PCM, and it's 8,000 samples a second, and it's 8 bits wide, and it's companded using something called Mu-Law companding, which basically uses a logarithmic scale to encode the amplitude of the waveform at that specific point. And so by using a logarithmic scale, you get more resolution at the lower amplitudes, where the majority of human voice energy actually is. So you get what sounds like 16-bit audio. But as you get to the higher amplitudes, you know, when people are shouting into the phone, then you lose resolution that sounds closer to 8-bit audio. But it's a neat little trick that gives you the impression of 16-bit audio on an 8-bit connection. And that's what we're talking on right now is Mu-Law.
Sweet.
So at 8,000 samples a second, you know, it's 8-bit PCM 8,000, which is 64 kilobits a second, which is the standard bandwidth of any, you know, telephone trunk.
Yeah.
And which explains why you can't get more than 56 kilobits a second on a modem, because, I forget the exact specific explanation, but it has to do with the fact that you lose a certain amount of bandwidth by going to tones and then going back from tones and being on analog lines. So you can only guarantee up to 56 kilobits a second, but I digress.
Gotcha.
Anyway, you know, so your voice is chopped up into little, you know, bits of 8,000, of 8-bit data, little just eight individual bits of data at any given time. And a T1 basically, you know, transmits 24 8-bit frames in one go, plus a framing bit. So you get 193 bits at 8,000 times a second, which gives you 1.544 megabits a second, which is the bandwidth of a T1.
Uh-huh.
So it just loops through all of these. And so it does something called time division. So in 1/1/8,000th of a second, it actually transmits sequentially all 24 samples at that given time. And so, you know, so if you're in time slot 13, you know, whatever the switch is listening for is, you know, time slot 13, 13, 13, as it comes back again and again and again and again and again. So the internal switching matrix of a DMS-100, and I believe the 5ESS is the same as well, is kind of similar. It's, again, a time division switching matrix similar to a T1, but instead of 24, it has 32 channels. And they can, you know, repeat this as needed based on the capacity of the switch. But the basic module of this has 32 channels. And for the most part, it's just the same. What happens is, you know, there are various time slots. And I forget whether there are... I think one of two things happens. Either, you know, say you're making that intra-office call to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Either you two get connected to the same time slot in the switching matrix, or you get connected to one time slot and your neighbor gets connected to a different time slot. Say you're on 8, she's on 25. And then those two are connected together internally in the switch. Either way, basically, you know, you've got just this band of data going by that the computer is processing, and you only get to hear the bits which are pertinent to your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Asterisk is TDM internally as well as time division. It's not VoIP internally. So all the switching is TDM. But basically, very basically, that's how that works. Now, as far as, you know, the internal software of the various systems, they couldn't be more different from one another. If you, you're a wizard asterisk, you will have no idea how to use DMS. And if you're a wizard DMS, you'll have no idea how to use a 5ESS because, you know, the interfaces are totally different. But as far as actually programming the DMS and the 5ESS, these are, for the most part, technologies which came about in the late 70s, early 80s. So you can still administer them from a VT100. It's all, typed commands, and it's all pretty much just keyboard-based. There is no graphical user interface for a DMS or a 5ESS. In fact, the 5E, if I remember correctly, runs a specific variant of Unix.
Gotcha.
Which helps explain why Unix is so stable, because it was designed for telephony environments.
But of course.
But of course. Thank you, Bell Telephone Laboratories Incorporated. All right. So,
awesome.
Let's see if there's anyone on... No, no one's in the queue. I guess no one wants to call in. I'm sure this would be far more successful if we actually did the show live. So if you guys out there have any questions or comments about the way the call-in thing should work or the way you'd like it to work or whatnot, just mail it on in and we'll take it under consideration. So Right Coast sent an email in response to my query for comments. Mm-hmm. He says, "Greetings, Tron." I had to burp there for a second. 110. 10. Ryko sent in an email, and he says, "Greetings, Tron. Google, hey, what you know, it's another Google email. Google has always been a company whose initial forays into a technology only foreshadow grander plans. Tudor Ratio Softpedia Tech Editor writes, it's more than likely that Google Talk won't stop here, its goal being more than just PC-to-PC communications. Just as 3 months ago we were 90% sure that Google will launch an IM client, today we can say with confidence that in less than 3 months Google Talk will be integrated with cellular telephony." So that's the quote. And then Right Coast continues on. "I would love to hear your guys' collective thoughts on what that means and explain in greater detail its possible effects. Not in a Google owns the world kind of way. I would like to hear the impact of that on our current communications and telephony model. Whether Google refines and implements the idea in a generally accepted way, or another company does, how would that affect consumers, companies, and our current communications model in the short and long terms? Regards, Right Coast." And there actually was another question, which I'm going to read back here and roll into this. This is from Magnum IP on the forums. I love that handle. I love the wordplay in the handle, Magnum IP. We had a contest to find this guy a new handle, and Magnum IP was the winner. I didn't suggest it, but I love it. Anyway, he writes, "I would like to know the impact Verizon's Fios is going to have on landlines. To be more precise, what is the good/bad points of copper and fiber optics? For those of you who don't know, Fios is a new service Verizon is offering where they actually bring fiber optic cable to your premises, to your house or to your apartment building or whatever. And this has actually kind of been the wet dream of telephony experts for 25 years now. I recall reading a book about the Bell system that was written in 1978 and 1979. And they were hot on the trail of fiber to the premises even then. But just for telephony, it doesn't quite work. But for data and telephony, it's really intriguing because, with fiber, you can get a lot more bandwidth out of fiber than you can out of a DSL connection. But my DSL connection that I'm talking to you on right now is 6 megabit down, 608 kilobit per second up. And what Verizon Fios is, it's like 15 megabit down and I think 5 megabit up or 3 megabit up or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fraction of what a fiber optic cable can carry. If you look at the optical carrier systems that the telephone networks use for their internal trunking over fiber, on one fiber pair, you can have, easily, 54 megabits a second for a, 45 megabits a second for a DS3. Let me pull up the page I have that lists all the capacities because I don't know these off the top of my head. All right, on a single fiber pair, an OC3 is 126 megabits a second, and you can even do, you know, up to OC192, which is 8,064 megabits a second. They've got OC768 now, which is, you know, many times 192, and you can even multiplex OC whatever's onto fiber. You can use something called wavelength division multiplexing, which puts each different circuit at a different wavelength on the same fiber. And then you have something at the other end which decodes the different wavelengths and splits them all out. But the capacity of fiber is just absolutely mind-boggling. So what Verizon is offering now to its consumers is, you know, like kind of throwing a toothpick into a volcano as far as bandwidth is concerned. So, you know, but what impact this will have is, you know, the main barrier to the deployment of VoIP as a replacement for standard copper, you know, copper telephone lines has been bandwidth and latency. Most standard cable modem connections are 1.5 megabits down and 128 kilobits a second up, and that goes the same for most standard low-end DSL. And, you know, that will handle reliably one single call and at regular telephone network quality, assuming you don't do much else with your DSL at that moment. You know, you can have something checking email, you can do some like web surfing, but the minute you start downloading something, your call is just totally useless as far as talking on. So what will happen once, you know, higher bandwidth DSL becomes norm, and, you know, and once fiber starts displacing copper to the premises, is that you're actually going to see copper telephone lines start to slowly become a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that there will, at some point in the not-too-distant future, be a time where you won't be able to order a copper telephone line anymore. You'll have to order fiber and then run VoIP over it. You know, copper telephone lines will remain as a grandfathered service, but for all new service, you're going to have to order fiber and run VoIP over that. And even if you don't run VoIP over it, you know, the phone company can easily provision a data circuit and a phone circuit on the same piece of fiber, you know, a straight time division phone circuit versus having VoIP all the way out to your premises. But even so, the telephone network is actually going to change dramatically in the next 10 to 15 years. Right now, it's for the most part all time division. You know, all the switches operate on a time division matrix, and all the circuits between them are, you know, channelized DS1s and DS3s with individual channels for individual phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
But since the majority of traffic going over the network these days is actually data, it makes more sense for the phone companies to transition their networks to be from, or where was I going with this? It's easier for the, it makes more sense, you know, logically, network-wise, for the phone companies to abandon their time division networks and move to packet switch networks and basically run IP on their networks. And if done correctly, an IP phone call sounds absolutely no different from a standard time division phone call. As long as you've got enough bandwidth and low enough latency to throw at it, then it should sound exactly the same.
Okay.
And so, you know, what'll happen basically is that the phone companies will, again, eventually stop offering standard wireline telephone service. You'll just have VoIP out to your premises, and from there, you know, they'll probably give you a terminal adapter that gives you an Ethernet connection and, you know, an analog phone connection for your existing phones, and then as analog phones become a thing of the past and we have, you know, VoIP phones all over the place, they'll just, you know, you'll have one network on your at your premises that you plug all your computers and your telephones into, and telephony will basically become another application delivered over IP.
Okay, now I can see how this could become, like, useful. Well, like, say, for instance, like, okay, here in Iowa, where, like, VoIP is barely, you know, showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just, to be honest, there's, like, areas in Iowa just that don't even have phones, or, like, barely just got phones.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I mean, it's just not Iowa. There's, like, places, like, all around the country, you know, that are, like, some areas are just, like, so not, I mean, who's going to want running cable out to, like, the middle of a field, like, where there's nothing for 200 acres or, like, miles or whatever, you know? How practical is it going to be for that, then? Like, and so is it going, like, how is it going to affect that?
Well, I mean, for some areas, obviously, you know, that either there isn't enough demand for data or, you know, it's too expensive to run fiber out to the premises. You know, well, see, the thing about running fiber is, for the most part, it costs about the same as running copper. In fact, it may be cheaper because you can run fiber. I'm saying, assume you run a fiber cable and a copper cable of the same, you know, diameter. The cost as far as, you know, labor is going to be the same. And, you know, labor ends up being the main cost component of running this stuff, not the actual materials themselves. So, you know, there are, you know, rural places where, sure, they don't have phones, but there are rural places where they do have telephones. And it's exactly the same. They can, you know, if the good thing about fiber is that it doesn't suffer the problems, you know, the length limits that copper does. With copper, you can only have a loop of a certain length. You can only, you can put load coils on it and get it, you know, and extend the range of the copper. But, and that's totally analog, and that destroys your ability to have any sort of data service on that loop. But for voice service, you know, you can get that copper loop, you know, going a considerable amount of distance. Obviously, you can't extend it forever, but you can extend it, you know, several miles beyond what it would normally handle. And the nice thing about fiber is all you need to do is put a repeater along the line every, you know, 15 to 30 miles, I think. I think it might even be more depending on the type of equipment used. But, you know, just as long as you have those little repeaters, you can, you know, really, you can easily have someone on one side of the county being served out of a switch on the complete other end of the county, you know, and if you have a complete fiber connection out to their premises, it's not going to be any different from someone who's served out of a, you know, served across the street from the switch. So, in fact, once fiber becomes the de facto method of delivering telephony and data services to customers, it'll be, you know, more reasonable to run, you know, services out to the consumers way out in the sticks.
Yeah. I was going to say, because, like, I mean, there's people that I know that are, like, barely getting internet, you know? And so, I mean, like, I could see how things, I mean, obviously things are going to move along faster, you know, where there's more people and the need for it. But I was just, like, I guess, like, just wondering, like, cost-wise, you know, and just, like, I guess, how
right.
It would affect. But, like,
well, I think cost-wise, you know, copper and fiber is, I'm not really sure what's more expensive these days. I think on a per-foot basis, probably copper is probably a lot cheaper than fiber. But considering that, you know, on one strand of fiber, you can run, you know, 24,000 telephone calls.
Yeah.
Sorry, on one fiber, on a OC-192, you can run 129,000 telephone calls. You know, and that's just one OC-192. So on one single fiber pair, you can run a hell of a lot more than you can on, you know, any copper cable you could possibly dream of.
Unless
it was a really, really, really thick copper cable. So per actual physical foot, I think fiber is more expensive, but as far as, you know, utilization per foot, the cost of fiber is a lot less. That's why, you know, pretty much every part of the long-distance network these days and every part of the inter-exchange network these days is fiber rather than copper. So the cost of delivering high-bandwidth data services to consumers is going to go down as well. I mean, look at Verizon Fios. The cost of getting a DS3 is thousands of dollars a month, and the cost of getting Verizon consumer fiber to the prem is, you know, $50 a month. The only downside of this, of course, is you need to have electricity at both ends, whereas, you know, with a copper phone line, you have the electricity to run the phone is delivered from the phone company. So that's the only downside, you know, and there are ways to screw it up. In Las Vegas, where I used to live, there was fiber to the curb delivered by Sprint, and they had just done some really asinine things with the way they provisioned it. It was bit robbed, it wasn't, you know, full 64 gigabits a second, so you have this kind of whining noise in the background, and that's basically, they can do that on a DS0. They insert they use every, you know, one bit every certain number of frames to indicate whether you're on or off hook. And that is called bit robbing. That gives you only 56 kilobits a second versus 64, and it can make the, you know, make it sound worse. But if you're running all data and you're doing all VoIP out to the consumer, then you can do full 64 kilobits a second. You can even do more. You can do wider bandwidths. You can do 128 kilobits a second. You can do 16-bit audio at, you know, 16,000 hertz, 24,000 hertz. You know, it'll sound amazing, but it'll use up a lot of bandwidth. But again, if you've got the bandwidth to throw at it, then it'll sound wonderful. So going back to the question that was asked about Google, you know, how will this change? How will, you know, Google VoIP's ability to do peer-to-peer phone calls change the telephony market, I honestly don't think it's going to have that huge of an impact, because you know, for the most part, you know, you've got to chat with a person and say, you know, hey, do you want to set up a phone call now? And they have to be sitting there, and they have to say, oh, okay. And then you have to set up the phone call, they have to acknowledge and whatnot. Whereas, you know, with a telephone, you just dial the number regardless of what's there, and you can leave a voicemail. And I think, honestly, from a human factors point of view, the telephone makes more sense, simply because you pick up the phone, you dial a 10-digit number, and you're talking to the other party. And whereas Google VoIP, you've got, instead of a handset, you've just got, you know, a microphone and speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to echo problems, and, you know, a lot of people don't have, you know, the correct setup for VoIP, and, you know, it can be a pain. So I don't think, honestly, that the fact that Google VoIP has, we're kind of getting close to the end, so I don't think the fact that Google VoIP has a peer-to-peer thing built into it in and of itself is going to be that detrimental to the telephone industry.
Mm-hmm.
But, where was I? So, but, you know, I think it'll raise awareness of VoIP, sure, but, you know, there's Skype, and Skype isn't making that many inroads into the phone industry. What's really going to do it is Asterisk and the other services where they actually give you a real telephone.
Yeah.
Or at least some simulation thereof, you know, a terminal adapter where you plug in a real telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what's going to happen there. But as far as Google Talk on cell phones. Yeah, we have instant messaging on mobile phones already. That's nothing new. It's just a different platform. VoIP on mobile phones is going to be a considerably different story because mobile phones don't give you really enough bandwidth to do any sort of reasonable VoIP. You can do compressed VoIP. You know,
mm-hmm.
You can do G.729. You can do GSM, but, you know, if your phone already does GSM natively, it doesn't make a difference. And also, GPRS bandwidth, you know, tends to be expensive for mobile phone companies. There are unlimited plans you can get, like from T-Mobile for the Sidekick. But, I mean, for the most part, you pay per kilobyte with GPRS. And for VoIP, that's just not going to fly. And, I mean, it would be great to be able to do VoIP from my mobile phone to my Asterisk box and do pure 64 kilobit a second MULAW from my mobile phone to my Asterisk box. And that may eventually happen someday when they are able to throw more bandwidth in the air at mobile phone consumers, but for the time being, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. What are your thoughts?
I have a question.
Sure.
Okay, so, never mind, actually. Alright. That's okay. I can ask you some other time.
Well, I mean, if it's a question that the audience might find useful, then go ahead and ask it.
No, that's alright. I'll post it on the forums and stuff. It'll bring up some good topics to talk about.
You sure?
Yeah.
Well, ask me the question anyway. We can edit it out if you don't like it.
Well, no, I was just going to ask you about, like, the 5ESS, because you were saying, like, you're saying how one line of fiber can hold, like, I forget how many, like, different lines. How many did you say?
Oh, 126,000 phone lines.
126,000. Like, how about then, like, with like the copper, like what's, I mean, like total
bandwidth on copper?
Yeah.
From the switch out to the subscriber's premises, or?
Yeah, well, okay, because like I'm reading right now online,
mm-hmm.
it says today's 5ESS is jam-packed with modules that can make switching easy enough for any printer monkey to run. This is like just a transcript of some guy talking, and it says this is just easy to maintain. It can hold up to around 200,000 lines in an office and roughly around 94,000 trunks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess I was just confused.
Oh, no. So what is your question?
Well, I was wondering, like, so what's with the 200,000 lines and with the 5ESS?
Oh, okay. The actual capacity of the internal switching matrix of the 5ESS itself maxes out at about 200,000 lines. Beyond 200,000 lines, you have to actually put more than one 5ESS in the building to handle all those subscribers.
Gotcha. All right. So it's actually internal.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes more sense. Okay, because I'm, like, sitting here reading about, like, the 5ESS, and I'm like, huh. I'm like, wait a minute, so if it, like, that totally answered my question. I just didn't know that it was internal that they were talking about.
Okay. But yeah, no, I mean, each individual trunking technology has a certain capacity for simultaneous calls, and then, you know, each switch will have its own maximum capacity for telephone calls.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense.
And when they say 96,000 trunks there, they say 96,000 actual individual circuits on, you know, telephone lines between offices. So 96,000, you know, different simultaneous calls that can be set up to different offices at any given time.
Okay.
And that's the maximum capacity. In practice, they never fill those out. But in theory, that's the most they can handle.
Well, that totally clears up everything then.
Cool. All right, I think we have we've hit our time limit. So let's see. There are no announcements. Well, let's see. If announcements this week. Again, quick questions or comments on the call-in format. We are just for as an announcement. I'm sort of planning on trying to at some point in the not terribly distant future do the show live instead of pre-recorded, so you guys can call in and you know, we can make the show more dynamic. So that'll I'm sure make you happy. But if you've got any questions or comments about that or anything we've talked about today, give us a call. We have the BinRev voicemail line, 213-415-1047. Again, 213-415-1047. And the BinRev radio email address, which is radio@binrev.com. So send us your comments, your questions, and so on. Any shouts you'd like to make, Sub-Zero?
No, I haven't announced it, though, I guess.
Okay.
Kind of an announcement. Next week, or September 5th, I guess, a week from tomorrow, I guess it'll be next week for everybody listening, Geek Love Radio starts. Our season 2 of Geek Love Radio is going to happen.
Oh, cool.
We're pretty pumped about that
because
we have a lot of projects that we've worked on all summer, and we have a lot more stuff that we've done. Right now, if you go to the site, it's until September 5th, and during the show, we're going to do a live update of our site. We have a new website, new design. We have a whole new... I can't even start to talk about the many different projects that we've worked on, so everybody needs to go check that out sometime. And that's about it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Shouts? I guess I'll give a shout to Postpathos, who sent in the music for the music review. If you guys have music that you want me to review, you're a songwriter, you're a band, whatever, send it in. For the time being, use stromcarlson@gmail.com or contact radio@binrev.com, and we'll get in touch with you. And I'll review your music. Yeah, as always, again, email us at radio@binrev.com. Any shouts you'd like to make?
I'll shout out my roommate, DJ Mollusk, and I'm going to shout out Droops. That's about it.
Cool. And shouts to, I forget who picked the handle, but whoever picked Magnum IP as the handle for Magnum IP. That's totally awesome. So shouts to him.
Great handle, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Anyway, site of the week is Postpathos. You can download the music, geocities.com/post_pathos.
Mm-hmm.
And our closing music this week is Postpathos, Waste Matter. So,
and actually, Strom.
Yeah.
Later on we'll talk, but I have something actually that you can help us with.
Oh?
We'll talk, though. It'll be part of the unveiling of everything on September 5th.
Oh, cool. Well, the mystery, the suspense, tune into to Geek Love Radio and find out what's going on, because I don't know what's going on right now.
Yeah, nobody does.
Cool. Well, anyway, see you next week.
Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Won't you roll yourself? Won't you explore the world that I see. Come and taste it. Won't even think you feel like a king. Touching angels. Won't feel pain or hurt or sting. Only the girl beats, baby. Will you feel it on the dance floor face down? Drop the water, girl, to put you back together. Will you feel it on the winter sink of incense? I can't believe I left you lying there forever. Explanations and tears are never enough. Won't you roll and roll with me? Won't you roll, you said? Won't you roll the world that sees? Come and taste it. Won't this thing feel real like a kid? Teething angels. Won't feel pain or hurt or stay. Only the drum beats, baby. I told your father that I loved you, Jamie. I can't forget how we were crying there together. But she and Molly said I loved them, Jamie. But that will stop me now from missing you forever. Will you feel it on the dance floor face down? All the things won't just go to put your heart together. But will you feel it on the way to St. Vincent? I can't believe you went from there into forever. The absolution is here, but never. Won't you roll and roll and see? Won't you roll and roll and see? Won't you roll and roll and see? Won't you please stop hearing me? Number 5, you should be looking for me. Until I lost my brother. It's hard to do what you defend, but maybe the shattered pieces can remind all the others. You will feel it on a dance floor face down. All the peace water couldn't put you back together. The one was with you on your way to St. Vincent. That you was dying, now we're missing you forever. You pay your mother back in tears, it's never enough. You can roll, 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 you can roll